110 days in Ann Arbor, Michigan, on the football field.
We don't want to coach average. I don't want to be around you. Why be around average?
We do want to win because winning is the epitome of team effort.
Every coach who ever put a whistle around their neck strives to be the head coach at The Ohio State University.
Welcome back, everybody, to Buckeye Bar Guys here on Buckeye Bar Talk. I'm Mike.
And I'm John.
Tonight's date is Thursday, November 17th, 2022, and we'll be discussing the Buckeyes' victory this past weekend, the upcoming game against Maryland coming up here in a couple days, and going over our typical score predictions, and we're going to start the show off talking about the college football rankings. So the top, here I got it right here. Top 10 for this week, basically is Georgia held on to 1, Ohio State held on to 2, Michigan held on to 3, Tennessee is 4, or TCU is 4, Tennessee is 5, LSU 6, USC 7th, Alabama 8, Clemson 9, and Utah 10. With Penn State on the outside looking in at 11. So, you know, a lot of, you know, not much change from last week. A couple teams moved up. You know, Alabama had a big win over Ole Miss, so they've dropped some. But pretty much the top end of it is fairly much the same. And here we are as we roll into coming down the stretch here, and if nothing crazy happens this weekend, we should be playing as the number 2 team, I would assume, next weekend against number 3 Michigan, and that will be a wild one. 2 undefeated teams. They'll be right up there as going into the game as game of the year, and we'll see how it looks if it probably compares up to, you know, the Alabama losses to LSU and Tennessee, which I would have to argue is probably right now the top games of the year.
Yeah.
You know,
no, yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't know. I think pretty much a lot of stuff looked like it stayed where it was. So I don't know if I can really have too much of an issue with anything if I haven't had one so far. I think USC is being vastly disrespected. I mean, wildly disrespected at number 7. They lost by 1 point on the road to a good Utah team. It's not like Utah, you know, is bad. Utah could be very well could be close to, you know, undefeated right now, or undefeated had a couple of plays gone their way. I think UCLA actually did okay against Utah, but I know Florida didn't beat them by much, and that was a home game in the swamp. Of course, Florida's kind of fallen off this year. So I think USC, I understand they have a bad defense. They haven't killed everybody, but I don't know. I mean, I do got some issue with them leading their conference, and LSU being a 2-loss team, losing a game by 30-something at home. Yeah. You know, I have a problem with them being ahead of them, honestly. And then if Alabama's 8, why is Penn State 11? You know, yeah. I mean, I guess Alabama played a lot closer than maybe Penn State did. So I guess I could see it. And Penn State did lose a game at home to Ohio State, but I don't know. I just think that it never makes sense. It really never does. I mean, I think Penn State being up even at 11 is good for Ohio State and Michigan, of course. Not that Ohio State and Michigan ever need any help if they're undefeated. But that's, I just don't understand. Like, it never has any rhyme or reason to it. It just always seems like, you know, how can we at least make sure one SEC team will always make the playoffs, even if, you know, doomsday happens. And now, yeah, now this year it's kind of like, what can we do to try to get 3 in if it is a possibility?
Well, like, and you know, I know, you know, and no disrespect to Tennessee, I mean, they're not going to get a chance here to, you know, prove themselves in the championship game, assuming, you know, Georgia doesn't have a complete collapse and lose the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't even matter because Georgia, the one game is actually right out of conference. Georgia's got it clinched.
Yeah. So I think that the weird thing here is that, and it's kind of the same with, you know, the loser of Ohio State, Michigan, they've kind of put LSU into the position that, you know, if LSU wins the SEC, that you got to assume that they're in. Like, you know, I would have to say that that would be a hard at, you know, it's what are they, six? Yeah, it's six. Yeah. You know, if they beat Georgia here in a few weeks, then they'll have two big wins and win the conference championship. And, you know, that would probably, you know, you would assume that that might be able to carry the day over the loser of the Ohio State Michigan game, even with the one loss. So that was kind of weird that they put them in that spot, especially like you can't argue that Georgia needs it. I mean, Georgia's the number one team in the country. If they win out, they're going to be the number one team in the country, regardless. So, like, I that was just kind of a surprise to me, and they kind of blocked USC there. I mean,
they really did. And that upsets me. They, yeah.
Like USC doesn't control their own destiny. They're not going to get a chance to, you know, probably play for the Pac-12 championship unless Utah loses here. I mean, they got Oregon this week. So that's, you know, possibly right. That's how
it, no, USC can control their own destiny. Cause Oregon lost. So okay. Oregon lost in conference, and it's the top two teams, right? So I think
they went to the top two.
There's no that anymore in the Pac-12. So I guess I don't know. I'm sure it goes into tiebreakers and stuff. So they are sitting at top of the conference right now if you look at the standings, but I think honestly, like, there's six teams in play right now for the Pac-12 championship game. Okay. So it's a wild one, just like the rest of them. But I believe USC can get in if they can take care of business with UCLA.
Yeah. Okay.
I think
it's just, yeah, that was just kind of weird because I mean, but again, it's like, okay. So, I mean, you think of just like all, you know, and we'll move on here in a second. I just, you know, if you think on full blown craziness, so say Ohio State beats Michigan, we'll say they win by 10. It's a home game, you know, Ohio State's, I think, much better suited this year than they were probably last year. You know, whatever. Michigan's still not going to be an easy game, but we'll say Ohio State wins by 10. You know, Georgia loses a very close one to LSU. You know, LSU beats them by 3. And then TCU wins out. So they're undefeated. They win out. So, like, are you going to put a one loss Georgia team and possibly a Pac-12 champion, USC team in over LSU? Are you going to put LSU in as a 2-loss team, even though they beat the number one team in the country? Like,
and Tennessee, you know, smoked them at home.
Yeah. So it's like, there's just a lot of like, just a weirdness right now that, you know, that you're assuming a one SEC team's getting in. But if Georgia loses in the conference championship game and USC sitting there, they end up winning the Pac-12. Like, I don't know. Does Georgia, like, to me, probably LSU deserves to be in over Georgia. And then, like, you know, like, it's just, and I don't think that will happen. So,
no,
like,
I don't either. I mean, I don't think LSU is going to win anyways. I think Georgia is that much better than them. So I don't think we got to worry about this. But I mean, Georgia can, and I'm not going to say play down to teams, but they can play a style of football that's going to keep a team in a game, because they're, sometimes they can be like Michigan, where they try to grind you out. And LSU is not short of athletes. You know, they're not short of big, strong, physical SEC players. So, I mean, they could hang around in that game and anything could happen at that point if it gets to the fourth quarter. You know what I'm saying? So even though I think Georgia is better and I don't think we're going to have to worry about this, but I mean, I don't think there's any way Georgia enters that game 12-0 and is not a playoff team. And then you got to look at, you know, LSU then, if they're the SEC champion. I mean, we've never had a 2-loss team in the playoffs, but you know damn well they're going to say, well, it's the SEC champion that's a 2-loss team. They deserve to be in. And that's going to raise some questions. And then you got Tennessee in front of them that they beat them in a head-to-head. So TCU's got to win out. Michigan and Ohio State got to play a close game with each other. And USC's got to keep winning. I mean, I don't know. It's not positioned great if you're not an SEC fan.
It just seems like, you know, we've had a few years where, I mean, it's pretty easy to pick the top four. I mean, there's only been like maybe the last several years, it seems like there's only been really 5 teams every year that, you know, are deserving of it. Like, talk about the year where the 12-team playoff would have been perfect for. It's like, you know, I don't think we've had for a while, we haven't had this many question marks going into the, because I mean, you're going to have an undefeated Big Ten champion, you assume, as long as they win the championship game. You're going to have most likely an undefeated, you know, I would say at this point, most likely an undefeated TCU. Like, it just kind of feels that way. Georgia's probably going to win out, but, you know, LSU is not going to be an easy out for him. So you're going to have possibly a one-loss Georgia runner-up, a one-loss Tennessee, and a two-loss LSU champion with a, what, one-loss USC or whatever, two-loss USC, one-loss USC, is it? Mm-hmm. That could be the Pac-12 champion. Like, so.
Yeah, it's wild, it's just, man.
Yeah, the, I mean, it's just some crazy stuff. And, you know, USC's got a tough, I mean, they don't got no picnic coming. I mean, if they beat UCLA, Notre Dame, and then, you know, go win the Pac-12, I mean, I would argue that they have just as good as a schedule as anybody else does in that spot right now. So, like, especially with Notre Dame playing better,
you know,
over the last several weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on that. Who knows? Maybe we'll just get lucky and A&M will beat LSU, and it won't happen, but maybe this is some, you know, these are all non-factors then.
Yeah. All right. So we'll move on to the Indiana victory. So we both nailed the Ohio State score. You got closer to the Indiana score, is you had 56-13. They ended up winning 56-14. So it was you know, pretty good prediction on our part. I think that's the second time this year where we both nailed the actual score of the Buckeyes part of it. And so but yeah, I mean, you could argue all you want. It's Indiana. They did almost everything that they needed to do after a couple of weeks of playing some very, very tough games that they came out and they played very good football. The weather wasn't perfect. So they played good football in some lousy weather. You know, there's a feel good story in there, which we will, let's talk about the game first and then we'll discuss Gambab real quick. But I mean, what can you say? You can't argue with anything that they did. I thought they looked very crisp. I felt that, you know, Ryan Day was coaching very, very well. He had some really good play calls, and I know it's Mayan and Dallin and Xavier, you know, Mayan gets hurt in there a little bit, but they end up running the type of runs that we've been calling them to run with. You know, they don't run a lot of stretch runs. CJ did run the ball a few times again, which is great. You know, keep putting that stuff on paper. You don't know when that's going to really fool somebody this year, that, you know, if it just holds a defensive end back just a tiny bit, I mean, that could be six for Trey, you know, when he's ready to play, or six for Mayan if he's ready to play. Like, you know, I mean, so I like the fact they ran that damn counter play, which we've been really pushing. It seems like now they've ran it a few weeks here. So that's good. I mean, it's nothing to really be angry about. I mean, so I was pretty happy with how the game went.
Yeah. I totally agree with you on that. You know, CJ looked good. I mean, it's still, you get nitpicky at points, like 17 to 28. It wasn't his best passing game, but it wasn't also the best game for some of his receivers either. But he looked good. I don't want to like be here complaining about 17 for 28 for 300 yards and five touchdowns, no picks, even though he almost threw a couple, but he looked really good. So nothing to complain about there. Of course, you know, Mayan Williams, I don't know if you really alluded to or not, he did leave the game with what looked like probably a more serious injury than what it might actually be. I mean, I think I saw like right away, like I went immediately to, I think that's a high ankle sprain, just how it kind of looked when they, you know, did it slow motion for us. But then they carted him off the field. He couldn't put any weight on it. It was like, oh no, did he like break his ankle? Did he rupture an Achilles? Like, what happened there? And it looks like it might be a high ankle sprain, but I mean, I'm nowhere near competing at the level as Maya Williams. I had a high ankle sprain in high school football one time. And like, if you keep running on that, keep taking hits, like it takes forever for those to feel better. So
yeah,
that's a hard one to come back from. It's not just like rolling your ankle gets fat for a couple of days, you know, you take a week off and eventually the pain subsides and go about your business. Like, those things can linger for a month, 6 weeks even. So, you know, hopefully he's healthy enough for Michigan. I don't know if you need him for Maryland, but hopefully you got him healthy for Michigan that he can do some stuff for you. As you mentioned, the run game was not strictly, but it was mostly downhill, which was really nice to see. You know, you had a lot of gap schemes. You had pulling guards. You had counter plays. They're running.
They just run better out of it. Like, you know,
but you know who actually runs that stretch play better than everyone's? Dallin Hayden.
Yeah,
that's true. He sees cutback lane. So like he's good at that stuff. The other two, though, I mean, they still, you know, there were times I think Mayan still danced a little too much in this game, even when he was running downhill. But that is suited best for Trey and Mayan. Just like,
I just think
that's where you're running. Hit that hole.
I just think when they're running downhill, and I know Urban ran a little bit more stretches, but when Urban would just run that stuff where, you know, those power runs, either with the running back or the quarterback, like it was almost guaranteed 4 yards at a time. And that's kind of like, and again, Indiana, I get it's Indiana, but you know, they have out of anything on their team, they have a good defense. I mean, it's a respectable defense. I don't know where they are in the rankings or anything, but you know, that's his specialty, their respectable defense. It kind of felt like old Ohio State football, that they were just getting 4 yards every time they were running the ball. And that's winning formula. That puts you at 3-2, you know, 3rd-and-2, you know, go get a first down. So, I mean, like, I just liked it because it's always, you know, you're just moving forward. You know, you're getting your 4 yards and you're falling forward, and, you know, your linemen know where they need to go block, and they just give you enough, and they get you to that 3 yard mark, which is supposed to be what they're supposed to do. And then you do the rest. And then, you know, and I think the running backs just flourish a lot better in that. I mean, I've always preferred that running style, even when we have the, you know, the JTs and the Justin Fields and the guys that can, you know, do the, you know, zone reads too, that, you know, I like just when they just keep it simple because they're so good at it that, you know, and they're just so hard to beat because, especially when you got a play caller like Ryan Day, it makes his second downs and his third down passing games just so much harder to defend because it always keeps the running game alive.
Ryan did say after the game that he's probably been too stubborn with run calling on short yardage situations this year, which I think that's good for him to recognize that. I'm listening to a lot of like beat the guys on the Ohio State beat this week, and they bring up a good point. Like, you don't have to just out muscle people on 3rd and 4th and 1 and run the ball. Like, Ohio State's not built for, you know, 23 personnel and get everything real tight. Where Ohio State's the best is to spread people out because that's where you have your weapons. And yeah, I think sometimes to develop this toughness that, you know, they've been kind of harping on all year, all off season, that they're kind of losing sight of that. But who knows? Maybe you won't even see it against Michigan. You know, maybe it's just stuff to put on tape until then. Maybe it's like, hey, we got until Michigan to see if we can really perfect this. But it doesn't have to be the style of play that you play as. I mean, you can be tough and spread people out. That's fine. It doesn't have to be all condensed. I mean, I liked what they did. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they looked really good at different times, but I still don't know if that's their most effective offense, is running goal line sets every, you know, anytime they're in a 3rd and 1.
I think some of the stuff that they could do is, like, you know, try to do some motions and stuff like that. And that would open things up. Like, you know, I'm thinking about, like, you know, and I know maybe Jackson Smith's the perfect guy for it. He's not there, but probably Abuka could do this.
Maybe Xavier Johnson. We saw some very explosive plays from him.
You
know,
you put him in motion, you move him, you kind of move him to the backfield, and then when the play goes off, you go to hand the ball off, and then you throw it out to the flats real quick. And so it's kind of like a play action, and that it's just nobody possibly out there with the wide receiver, you know, that you had in motion, and you could do revert, and then you could show multiple, another thing off of that where you do it again, but this time you hand the ball off. Like, it's just, you know, just different things you can do. And I think they have the opportunities, you know, they're good with those curl routes. They're good with, you know, coming back to the sidelines, maybe get CJ out on a sprint to the, you know, out into the, you know, a bootleg sprint or something where he's moving fast. And then, you know, so nobody traps him in there into the pocket, can run him down quick, and then just do a quick little curl throw.
Yeah.
And or run those plays where, you know, you have the tight end and the fullback both go into the flats and he comes out on a bootleg. And, you know, it's kind of like high or low, which one's open, mm-hmm. and you throw it to which one is, you know, the guy's not covered on.
Totally agree. I know there's a ton Ryan Day can do out of that stuff. Just, you know, don't bang your head into a wall just to prove that, you know, you can run in short yardage. Cause if you're running on first and 10, I mean, that's what matters, is getting yourself to short yardage. Like if you're not effective doing that, that's fine, but you got a bunch of pass catchers and playmakers that you don't necessarily need to do that in third and one. We all love it because, you know, that's like Justin Fry came in and said, you need to be able to run the ball 2 yards when everyone knows you're going to run 2 yards. And Urban Meyer, you know, Jim Tressel, maybe to a lesser degree, but we grew up like, you know, we watched Urban Meyer for years. And that was the absolute truth, was everyone knew we were running the ball and we were still picking up a first down. And then, you know, a little bit on top of it, too. But, you know, that might not be the strength of this team, and that's OK. Defensively, I mean, they played very solid all game. It was couple broken plays led to nothing. I mean, I might be the most concerned might be about our punt fielding, honestly. that might be my biggest concern moving forward right now, is fielding punts. But they played a great game.
I mean, that's an off-season topic, but there's been no wow movement moments the last couple of years, the special teams, where I'm like, yes,
they blocked a punt. They blocked a punt.
They did block a punt. They finally blocked a punt. I'll give them that one.
They went for it.
Outside of the punt block, there's been very few moments where I've seen where it's like, yep, that's why we need a full-time special teams coach. Like, you know,
yeah,
a defensive coach, an offensive coach, somebody on that team can take on extra special teams duties. Hire next year. Nothing against Parker. Keep Parker. What the hell? They got a lot of money. Pay him what he's making and make him a darn like assistant coach on the team. Like, you know, like you don't have to get rid of Parker. Nobody say he just he'll lose his recruiting responsibilities because he can't go out because he won't be one of the main coaches. But whatever. Hire an actual defensive minded coach to be on this team, and, you know, use money to keep Parker. If you like Parker, you want him to stay on your special teams guy and have maybe one of the defensive coaches oversee it, you know, to make sure that I don't care about that. It's just, I want another guy that can coach defense on this team. And, you know, it's always been my opinion. And there's not been anything that's really taking me off of my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I just think it was a lost opportunity. I mean, they always play around with this notion that Larry Johnson's retiring at any minute. Like, you know, you need someone to be his successor and to have him on staff right away. That's just, you know, my opinion on that. All right. So anything else you want to get to off
quick? Let's quickly do players of the game for both sides of the ball, and then we'll talk about Cam Babb.
Okay. Well, I'm going to, he'll be my honorary offensive player of the game. I mean, my offensive player of the game, I'm giving it to Dallin Hayden, because he really did step up, and it wasn't a hard game, of course, but he looked good. He averaged over 5 yards per carry. He had a touchdown. And then mine got hurt and he had to shoulder it. I mean, and he was the guy they leaned on. So I was very impressed with the true freshman.
Yeah. I liked what I saw out of him. I loved what I saw out of Xavier Johnson. Like that run.
He's a playmaker, you know, man.
Like, man, maybe they should give him more opportunities, like returning kicks and stuff, because
I think so.
He has good vision. He makes guys miss. He has good vision. He keeps on going forward. So like, I like him a lot, and I think they should give him maybe an opportunity in that spot. But
well, he had a 30-yard kickoff return in this game. He looked good. Yeah.
I mean, what a beautiful run by him on the touchdown run. I'm going to go with Mayan just because, you know, I said one of these guys were going to get over 200 yards and he was well on his way to doing
it. Mayan was like, well on his way to 300 yards.
Like he was, he just looked like that. He was tired of, he didn't look necessarily healthy. I mean, he was running a lot slower than it seemed like he normally does. I mean, he's not a super fast speed guy to begin with, but you know, so you could tell he's definitely hurting when he's running the ball, but he grinds out yards just so hard. And
he is so violent.
And it's like every time he gets the ball, it's like a 5 yard gain, 5 yard, 8 yard, 10 yards. He just doesn't go down easily. And like, you think he's only going for 3 yards and then he adds another 3 yards when they're trying to tackle him. So it's like, you know,
if you cannot get into his legs on, you know, tackle when you're making contact with him, forget about it. I mean, he is so freaking violent with that offhand, just, and he's so strong. I mean, he just pushes those guys back and he's like, he's looking for someone to fight every time. Like you can see like winding that arm up when he's running, like he's just looking for the next guy to punch.
Yeah. But yeah, so I really enjoyed what he was doing. You know, if Trey's ready to play this week, hopefully Chip's ready to play this week. You know, I wouldn't rush Mayan back too fast. If he could sit out another week and be 80% for next week, you know, that's, I'd rather have that than, you know, him possibly hurting his leg more because, you know, they try to play him against Maryland. I mean, they need running backs. I mean, I don't know. They necessarily could go into this game with Dallin and Xavier by themselves. They might be able to, you just might have to go into the game that, you know, we have good wide receivers, we have a good quarterback, and this is going to be a 400 yard passing game, you know?
Right.
You know,
yeah. So
and you that could might do be that. The thing too.
You could do that. I mean, but I'm not sure. And we'll talk about Maryland. I'm not sure I lose much confidence going against Maryland. If you're telling me my running back options for that game are Dallin Hayden, Xavier Johnson, Chip Trainum, Mitch Rossi, and CJ Stroud. Like, I feel pretty confident still against Maryland in that situation, as long as you keep those guys healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just, you know, we're not really sure about Chip right now. I mean, he was hurt last week. So who knows? I mean, that could have been just more precautionary than anything. I don't know how banged up he actually was, but
I think it was a warm-up thing or no, it must have been end of the week because he came in as a game time decision.
So yeah, that's just my thoughts on that. But and then on the defense, who would you say was your player of the game?
I mean, so many look good out there. I'm gonna say Steel Chambers because I think he had the most like noticeable and impactful like tackles. Like he had one that he came up on that Dexter Williams, the quarterback, and he chased him to the sideline. I mean, and he dove for the guy and it was a very, like, I didn't think he got that much of him. And it was a very forceful throwdown though. Like he got him good. And I think he had another one. He had a running back close or maybe for like a yard gain or something very similar. Like he's been much more explosive, much more attacking as the year has gone on. I think he is been a diamond in the rough as a linebacker, and he's actually developing into one of the better linebackers I think in the country. And when it comes to, you know, your athletic outside guys that can make plays sideline to sideline.
Yeah, I definitely liked what I saw at a steal. I thought Eichenberg had another really, really, really good game. You know, I'm not going to say he had a lot of necessarily maybe stats on this, but I did notice a few big plays out of him. So I'm going with my player game. I've said a couple times on a few preview shows this year that he was going to be the player of the game. It didn't eke out, but I think I'm going to give it to him. Jack Sawyer in this game, I thought he looked really good. In
two sacks.
Two sacks. He was in there on a couple other plays. He was a little bit of a force, and it was like kind of like it was his turn on the defensive line this week. And we've had a couple games like that this year where it's like, you know, there have a couple a different guys show up every week. And that's, hey, I like that because, you know, it's kind of hard to really block these guys when you don't know who the hell is going to be the one showing up that week. So like, you know, that's going to be the forceful player. So I really liked how he played. So I'm going to go with him to this week as a player, defensive player of the game.
And I'm pretty sure after the game, Jim Knowles did recognize that Sawyer made those sacks just coming from a natural speed rush defensive end position. And maybe he thought that, you know, the Jack position, maybe Jack's actually better suited being, you know, just a rushing defensive end, that maybe that's not the best role for him, moving him around like that. I think it's still a good role for him. I just think, you know, maybe he doesn't, maybe another year of learning it, but Jack is an impressive rushing, you know, defensive end. Like, he's an impressive rushman. So I think that'll be something to look forward to, but confidence is great for him because, you know, he has the gift. He has the skills. He just needs to put it together.
Yeah. I thought he did really well. Just real quick, the one thing, the last couple of weeks, Jim Knowles, I don't want to say he's throwing stuff on paper for Michigan, but it kind of feels like he's throwing stuff on paper for Michigan. It seems like they've went away a little bit from the standing guy, but even though they're doing it, but in other times they're playing a lot more four down than it seems like they were playing earlier in the year. They're playing a lot more three linebackers than they were doing earlier in the year. So they're doing a lot of different things. And I think he just feels comfortable now that he could really, you know, he's still not a crazy in on the road. I mean, they're not rotating six linebackers in like that, but you know, he likes Cody Simon in there as his third linebacker. You know, Paley's gotten some play over the last few weeks. You know, I think he likes the few guys that he has and realizes that, you know, I can play two linebackers and five guys in the secondary, but I can also play, you know, three linebackers and four guys in the secondary, or maybe three linebackers and three down linemen. He's had a couple games this year where he's only been playing three down linemen, so at different spots. So
right.
It's like he's showing a lot of different things. You know, so it just kind of makes you wonder, you know, what he has in store for Michigan. I think that I'm kind of happy we only have one more week until we get to see it.
It's about time, man.
All righty, Cam freaking Babb. So this guy gets in, and I'm just like thinking, if the time, I know we're in the running situation and stuff like that. And I'm just thinking, I'm like, I wonder if Ryan Day is going to do it. I think he will do it. If they get down into the red zone, you know, he's not going to try to throw a bomb to Cam Babb, and, you know, he's not going to be trying to go throw the ball over Indiana. But if they get into a spot into the red zone, are they going to do it? And I'm like, I bet they will do it. And I'm glad they did. I mean, it was a very nice, easy, you know, pitch and you catch, you know, it was, they've ran those type of plays how many times over the years? Those are easy touchdowns for them. And
yeah, but that's not an easy route. I mean, it's not a difficult route to run, but it's still a route to run. It's not like it was schemed up as some misdirection that Cam Babb's just standing there all by himself. You know, like he still had to run a route and make a catch.
It's just a route. I think that they run a lot of, because they do. That is usually, you know, those kind of passing plays are a lot of times their go-to passing plays when they're in the red zone, you know. So I think he was used to it. It's still, he has to still be able to cut on that knee, those knees,
yeah,
to be
right, able to, both, you know, of them,
you know, get out to the outside. But he ran it perfectly. He had a step on the guy, and you know, he was open. He made the catch. He went down to the ground, held on to his catch, and you know, it's history. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I was, and then of course, then the next day, you know, they send out this video of, you know, the Cam Babb catch and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, you know, it was emotional when it happened. And then they got to do that to you.
Yeah. I mean, it really was emotional. I could have cried for the kid. It was just so much of that. I mean, you coming back from four torn ACLs since the senior year of your high school season. He had a torn meniscus earlier this year that, you know, was a setback, but he got healed. You know, it got better. Obviously, it took this long into the season for him to feel healthy on it. The fact that he, you know, stayed with it and even played another down of football after all this is the victory there. But the touchdown catch is the cherry on top. And, you know, I hope you can get some more production out of him. And I hope whatever he wants to do with his future, whether it's continue to, you know, try to do something else or just continue to inspire, whatever it is, you know, he'll be successful. I mean, the fact that he stayed with it this long just speaks to the character of him. He's been voted captain twice and both, he barely played both seasons, you know? So, I mean, it just speaks to what he is for this team. But yeah, I mean, it was incredible. And like I said, the fact that he even got back on the field, that's the real victory. I mean, and
yeah,
I hope every Buckeye looks at that and they take that with them and they play a little extra, you know, little extra pep in their step for Cam Babb and for the team, because everything he's given to get back on the field for those guys, just, I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the kid, and nobody would have called him a quitter. Nobody would have called anything. Oh, after four ACL tears, he could have took after three ACL tears, he could have took a hardship waiver and finished on scholarship with a degree from Ohio State.
Still been around the team. He
would have been around a team. He maybe helped out as a graduate assistant. I mean, there's all kinds of things he could have did, but he wanted to play, and, you know, he got onto the field, and I mean, he scored, you know, I mean, only half the stadium was filled at the time. I bet a lot of those people probably, you know, if they could see into the future, would have stayed and stuff like that. But I don't blame them either. It's a blowout. I feel great for the people that stayed. I felt great for the people that got to see it, watching the game on TV. And it was just a very touching moment. And you just saw how much how happy the whole team was. And it just shows how close they are as a team. And, you know, that was a special moment. And, you know, these guys, you know, they go to battle with each other. And it's not just during the fall. I mean, the hard work that they put in through the whole entire season, you know, they're together all the time. I mean, these are pretty much the only people that they know pretty much in the university for the most part, with, you know, a few exceptions, because it's just team. And so I was, it's just a great moment. I was very happy for him. And, you know, I would love to see him get one more, especially next weekend, if they could get him into a shot against Michigan at his final home game in Columbus. You know, that would be really, really special.
Yeah. I mean, and just, I don't even know how you ever have the confidence after four of those, the run on, you know, run as hard as you can to plant, you know, to change direction on your knees. So, I mean, kudos to him, because that in itself just takes bravery, because I mean, you've already torn each one twice. Like, I don't know how you have any confidence that you could ever run on those again. So kudos to him. Great job. That it's amazing. And like you said, I hope there's more in store for him, but if not, hell of a way to cap off this career.
Yeah, exactly. Alrighty, Maryland, you got anything you want to go through with them?
No, I mean, I don't really have anything prepped here. Maryland's they're really starting to slide as the year's gone by. I mean, they still have an explosive offense. Talia Tagovailoa is not healthy though. You know, I think they've only scored 10 points the last two games combined. They've been on the road those two games. So, I mean, it's always harder to win while you're playing on the road, but Ohio State's much better than Wisconsin and, quite frankly, Penn State is. So I don't know what the hell that really looks for Maryland, because, I mean, they lost 23-10 to Wisconsin and then 30-0 against Penn State. I don't know.
They're
still good offense. Like, they're still good offense.
Yeah, it's good offense. It seems like now that they're really are getting deeper into the Big Ten schedule, that, you know, they're just kind of, again, they're kind of like what we expect out of them. They're good offense. They're the fourth best scoring offense in the conference. But, you know, they don't have the horses that, you know, the Ohio State, Michigans and Penn States have. So it's like they're starting to get worn down with the season. And, you know, those good offenses can only take you so far if you don't have, you know, if you don't have abilities to kind of grind your way out of some games in the Big Ten. It can be really tough on you, especially when you're playing a lot of teams that can grind on you and, you know, take blows against you. And if you can't take those body blows back for an entire game, it's almost hard to be able to have a type of successful season if you're going to be one on play where, you know, teams like Ohio State, Michigan and Penn State are used to be playing at the end of the year. That if you want to get up to that level of play, I mean, you got to really be able to have players on that team that can really, you know, play four quarters, 12 games a year, because, and it's not an easy, you know, battle. I mean, there's a lot of you know, there's a lot of semi-joke teams in the conference, but there's a lot of teams in the conference too that play a very physical brand of football, and you really got to be able to handle that for 12 games. And it's not easy.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can actually start calling when a team starts declining after their climax early in the season. I think we can start calling that a Maryland. Like, I think you could say that team is on, you know, their Maryland downslope. Because, I mean, this seems to happen every year with the Terrapins, is they just, like you said, they get beat up and they don't have, as Ryan Day would say, or Urban Meyer, the competitive stamina to keep going throughout the course of a season. So, I mean, we're seeing it again this year with Maryland. I don't know. I mean, I think they're a good offense. I think they got athletes. I mean, they recruit a very, you know, talent rich part of the country, but, and Mike Locksley, I've never been really impressed with him as a coach. So I don't know. I don't know how this one's going to turn out. I mean, I think offensively, and you mind if I go into players of the game?
That's fine.
I'm going to roll right into it. I know it's not much of a preview for Maryland, but I don't know. We've said a lot about Indiana. I'm thinking a lot about next week too. I think offensive player of the game, though, I look for Emeka Egbuka to have a really big bounce back game, maybe even Julian Fleming, but I'll say Egbuka. I think you got to get those guys going into Michigan. You know, you can't have Marvin Harrison being your only receiving threat. Like, even though I think Super Marv could take on three defenders at once, you don't want him to have to do that. You need to be able to rely on those other guys. And I think this is a great game to get Egbuka back on schedule. Like you said, your running game might be a little iffy depending on the health of them. So throw all over them, get Egbuka going, get some concepts going, get him some confidence, get him, like, I don't know, 150 yards and 2-3 touchdowns, maybe one even on the ground, like get that young man a game. So yeah, I'll give him my offensive player of the game.
I agree with you. I did like that last week against Indiana. I do like some of the catches that Stover ended up making through the game, because he had a couple games in there where he was started to drop a little bit.
Yeah.
Have a little bit of the drop season. You know, it seemed like he bounced back a little bit, and that's good for confidence. I do agree with you. Try to get some easy throws early in the game to both Egbuka and to Fleming if you can. I know it's hard to call plays out for certain players, and, you know, but, you know, do what you can. And I'm not saying bubble screens, you know, nice, you know, slant routes, curl routes, you know, out routes, whatever, you know, just try to get these guys some, you know, pitch and catches, that, you know, some nice throws where they can catch the ball and they can get a couple confidence. Cause, you know, it's better to have more than just Marv being fully confident going into next week. So I definitely agree with all that. I did say, you know, depending on what the running game is, you know, they might have to throw for 400 something yards, which is fine. They can do. I'm assuming Trey's going to play this week. Right now, I'm assuming that. So I'm going to say Trey's going to be the player game, because I'm going to be like, if they get a running game going, if Trey's there and Chip is there and maybe Dallin and a couple other guys, Xavier Johnson, if they can really, I think they're going to try to establish the run again, just like last week, because, you know, I think this is going to be kind of a game that they're going to want to do throwing. They want to get some yards and stuff like that. But everything's next week. I mean, next week is, you know, I mean, especially when we see the crap that's going on in the West. And I'm not saying anybody can lose on any given Saturday and stuff like that. So you got to be ready for it. But, you know, next week it's the Big Ten championship game for all purposes. So, you know, you got to be ready for that. And so another game of establishing the running game, and maybe, you know, maybe letting CJ have a little bit of an easier game this week, and the receivers having a little bit of an easier game, and take a couple things off the, you know, the film study, you know, that maybe Michigan will be thinking about, you know, after the last few weeks. Well, you know, they're going to try to establish the run on us, and maybe then you kind of trick them up a little bit. You know, you never know. It's always about chess. These games are chess. You know, it's definitely not checkers. It's all strategy here, what they're trying to do. But so I think Trey's going to play, because I think if he's healthy, they're going to want him to play just to get him at least some reps prior to Michigan. And I think he's going to look good. And I think he'll be pretty dominant. And the other running backs too, I think they're going to want to establish that, and they're going to have a good running game.
Okay. I'll give you a bold prediction on offense. I think G. Scott Jr. is going to have 5 catches in this game.
All right. I'm trying to think of a bold prediction. You know what? Just because they're going to, again, I think C.J. Stroud, I'm not going to say it's going to be a 50-yard touchdown run, but he's going to have a touchdown run in this game because.
I kind of thought that, and too.
And it's going to be out a little bit. It's going to be like a 10-yard, a 15-yard touchdown run where, you know, that he's going to just keep the ball. Nobody's going to be expecting him to keep the ball. And, you know, he's just going to turn the corner and nobody's going to be there. And it's going to just be an easy run for him. And he's going to take it to the house.
I know he can't really have Heisman moments until next week, but start getting some Heisman-esque, you know, scenarios on tape and getting some confidence to do that.
We'll talk more about it next week, but he's definitely, CJ Stroud is in the position right now. Let me just put it this way. If he has the same game that he had last year against Michigan and they win the game, he's the Heisman Trophy winner. Like, you know, he had good enough stats last year to win the Heisman Trophy, you know? So I think, you know, he wins the Heisman. If the stats are all the same but they come up with the W, then, you know, he's going to win the trophy this year.
I like that. Defensive player of the game. I'll actually roll this in a bold prediction all into one. So I think it's going to be Cam Brown. I think our secondary is actually, I think our corner's starting to play better as they're getting healthier and getting probably just a little bit more used to Walton and Knowles. So I think Cam Brown's going to actually have 2 interceptions in this game, and one of them is going to be returned for a touchdown.
Yeah. On the secondary, man, it was nice to see Cam Brown back. I know Hancock made some mistakes, but, you know, he's getting in there. He's making some plays. He's learning. You know, it seems like J.K. Johnson and Jair Brown are much better than they were possibly earlier in the season. You could tell that they got a lot of more confidence in them. So where that was kind of a little shaky earlier in the season, like now that they're getting fully healthy, I really like where the corners are at right now.
Me too. And, you know, me too.
So I like what they're doing. So, yeah, I'm definitely, that's a nice pick. I'm going to say that, trying to think who I want to go with. You know, I think I'm going to go with Hickman this week. I'm going to go with one of those safeties. I think he's going to have a big game. He had a pretty good game last week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he started they're all starting to really establish themselves. You know, that secondary, I really like where they're getting at. I've always been a big fan this year of that 3 safety defense. And just because of all the versatility it brings, but it's like, they're just getting to the parts, you know, there's not a lot, you know, last year at different times, even though it was the running games that really killed you, you know, last year, it seemed like they had a lot of those mistakes in the secondary where guys were running free. And it just doesn't seem like that's the case anymore. You know, there's guys that get open, but there's always somebody there usually to tackle. Now they have to make tackle, you know, sometimes the tackling has been sloppy, but somebody's been there. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, Hickman, I think he's going to have a big game this week. I think he's going to have, you know, I think he's going to have a couple turnovers, whether it's, you know, he's going to, you know, force a fumble or two or get an interception or two. But I think, you know, he's going to force a couple of turnovers. And, you know, I don't think he's going to go to the house with any of them, but I think he's going to show up big. And, you know, they're getting ready for next week, man. They're going to, and I think a lot of people are going to be, it's going to feel a lot different for Michigan this year, you know, because they're going to have a lot of versatility challenging their running game between both 3 linebackers and 3 safeties. And, you know, I think they're going to mix that stuff up a lot.
Agreed. All right. So are we ready to get into some scores?
Yep. Let's get us on out of here with the scores.
Okay. So Illinois travels to the big house. They play Michigan, number 3, 10-0 Michigan at 12. Michigan stands right now as an 18-point favorite. I think this one's tricky. I think Illinois is very physical. I'm not sure how healthy they are, but at the end of the day, I think Michigan just overpowers them. I could see this game being like a backdoor or last minute cover for Michigan. I think it'll take them to the fourth quarter, but I think they'll wear Illinois down. And I do think that they will win by more than 3 scores. So I'm going to say Michigan covers at noon.
Yeah, I think Illinois is starting to get really run down. I'm not expecting a lot out of them out of offense. I think Michigan will show them down. But I think Michigan, like, they've been pretty conservative the whole season. I think they're going to be ultra-league conservative in this game. Like I said, it's all about chess.
That's true.
They're going to really, I think they're going to, if they could get out of this game by running the ball, you know, 60 times, they'll run the ball 60 times. And I think they will. I'm not saying 60, but you know, they're going to want to run the ball considerably a lot, I think, in this game. And I think they'll win somewhere like 31-3 or something like that. I think Illinois is just, again, it's like one of those things. I know where Burt's going, where Brett Bielema's going with this team. He just needs a couple more recruiting classes to get a little bit more depth in this. So I think they're starting to wear down a lot. Mm-hmm. But you know, unlike Maryland, I think he has the mindset of where he knows where he wants his team to be, and he'll eventually get it there if he stays with them. You know, but it's just the last few weeks, it just seems like they're starting to wear down, and you know, Michigan is just a lot better football team, and they're just going to out physical them. And so I don't think Michigan's going to try to put 50 on them. I mean, I could be wrong there, but I could see this game very easily being a 31-3 game in Michigan covering.
Man, I'm looking at these records. The Big Ten is bad this year. It's been a bad
season for it.
Oh, my God. Wisconsin, Nebraska at noon. Wisconsin, it's at Nebraska. Wisconsin's a 10.5-point favorite. I think they'll win. I don't think they'll cover that, though. I think it'll be within 10 points.
Who are they playing again?
Nebraska. Actually, Nebraska's bad. Wisconsin has played better. You know what? I'm going to say that they're going to cover that even on the road.
Yeah, I think they'll cover it too. You know, who's Nebraska going to hire, man? It's like, I wonder, you know, they could, if they could get a somewhat of a splash, and, you know, they're going to have to overpay somebody. If they can get somebody a splash there that can at least do a good recruiting job. You know, I'm not saying they're going to ever be the Nebraska of old again, but I think they can make some splashes and get back to being a respectable team that actually competes in the Big Ten Conference.
I just, like, Scott Frost got a bunch of good transfers always. It was, I don't know. Northwestern plays Purdue at noon. At Purdue, Purdue's an 18.5-point favorite. I don't foresee any weather issues that makes me think that they won't win by that much. Northwestern is very bad. I mean, they haven't won a game on U.S. soil this year. So I'm going to say Purdue at home will cover this. They'll win by more than 3 scores.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. You know, I think that, you know, they're definitely the better team. So yeah, I'll agree with you that they'll cover.
Indiana goes to Michigan State at noon. Michigan State is, they're all bad. They are a 10-point favorite in this game. Yeah, I'll say they cover. I don't think Indiana's really been playing very well recently. They haven't played close with anyone the last couple weeks. And Ohio State just kind of exposed them. I mean, they were exposed already. But yeah, I'll say Michigan State will win by more than 10.
Yeah. I agree with that too. The one thing that will be kind of interesting for the Michigan schools is that, you know, there is, you know, I mean, there are big weather systems moving over the Great Lakes this weekend. You know, I know that they're not, neither university is on the lakes, but you know, the northern lakes, you know, could push snow down through in-state Michigan. So like, you know, it'll just be interesting. Again, I'm not necessarily saying that does anything for the Michigan Illinois game, but it could be more interesting in the other one. The, you know, if there is significant snowfall, does, you know, Michigan, I don't think Michigan State or Indiana are really teams that can really grind out games. So that could be a much more of a toss up to see, you know, who can luck into the end zone. I don't know. I mean, I'll go with you. I think they'll win by more than 10, but I think there is a possibility in that game that could be a very close 3-7, 1-2, but I'll say they cover.
Penn State at 3:30 goes over to Piscataway. Penn State's a 19-point favorite. Everything tells me Penn State is a 19 points or better team than Rutgers. I think somehow the Rutgers is going to at least cover the spread. I don't think they're going to win the game, but I think it'll be within 19 points.
Where's that game again?
It's in Piscataway.
You know what? No, I really like how Penn State's played the last few weeks. I think they've, it was kind of, you know, after the, you know, the Ohio State loss that, you know, it kind of seems like that they always throw so much at Ohio State. And then it's like, they always drop a game the following week or they fall off the map a little bit. And I'm impressed that they're not, you know,
they've actually dominated the last 2 weeks. I mean, they shut out Maryland, like, I think, and they beat up Indiana.
I think they're going to blow Rutgers out, you know, respectively blow them out. I don't think it's going to be a 50 something to nothing game, but I think that they'll cover this game. I think that they'll win fairly comfortably.
I like that. Iowa goes to Minnesota at 4 p.m. Minnesota's a 2.5-point favorite. Man, Iowa's been playing better the last couple weeks. I don't know if I trust Minnesota or not. And Iowa can play in the elements just as well.
Yeah.
I think Iowa's going to win outright.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. I do like how Iowa's been playing better. And this is a game that doesn't matter on the elements side of it. Both teams can play in the elements. I'm assuming you're going to, whether it's just outright freezing cold, I'm assuming you're going to get some sort of elements out of Minneapolis. So like that, but I do think Iowa will beat them outright.
Okay. Let's top 25 real quick. Tulane's handling SMU right now. TCU Baylor at noon. In Waco, TCU is a 2.5-point favorite. Baylor's been up and down all year. I don't see why TCU would drop this game out of any. So I know they're not a huge favorite in this, but they keep finding ways to win games. So I'm going to go with them until I can't. I'll say TCU wins this game.
Yeah, it always seems like
2.5. I think they'll cover.
It seems like TCU is, you know, they have these games where they do start off slower. But they, as the second half gets going, they really pick up the, you know, they pick it up. And I like how TCU is playing. I don't know how they match up against the bigger teams for a possible playoff, but I do, you know, and I might regret it this week. And I think they're going to, I think this could be the final game where they possibly get really tripped up. I don't know possibly who they'd be playing in the championship or who they're playing next week, but, you know, I like TCU right now, how they're playing, and I think they're going to win. I do think they're going to make the playoffs because they're going to win out, I think. But like that. So I'll say they cover. 2's not a lot, or 2.5, whatever it was. I think they'll win somewhere in that. I think they'll win by 7 to 10, I actually think, you know, and they'll beat Baylor.
It's really not a good week for football, to be honest with you.
No, I know the way we got the couple big games out west.
Is this normally the week that they do Bedlam?
Are they doing Bedlam this week?
Is that not the last game of the season?
Normally, but I don't.
Well, that's it. Yeah, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma in Norman. Oklahoma is 5-5. Wow, they need this game to be bowl eligible. Man, they still need to win another one. Oklahoma is a 7.5-point favorite. This is a night game. Oklahoma State's really fallen off too, but Oklahoma's bad this year. I think Oklahoma State's going to win this outright.
Yeah, I kind of feel that way too. Who's Oklahoma playing next week? Because I think they lose this week, and they're not. They'll need to win next week.
Texas Tech. I mean, it's winnable.
Yeah, they should make the bowls next week though. But no, I think Oklahoma State's going to beat them.
USC UCLA 7-16, 9-1 versus 8-2. USC is a 2.5-point favorite. 8 p.m. This will be a good night game. I think this will be a lot of fun to watch. I think UCLA is going to beat them, to be honest with you. I don't like USC's defense. I think Chip will have something for them. It'll be close. I'm not going to say a blowout by any means, but I think UCLA will win this game.
Yeah, that's a good call. I've been going back and forth with this.
As much as I want USC to win out, I don't see it happening.
I think it's going to be a really, really close game. I think USC is going to nip them just by enough to cover. I think they'll win by 3. Like, you know, I think it could be an end of the game field goal to win this. Like, you know, they might even cover. This might be a 1-point win, but I'll say they'll cover, but I think it's going to be really close.
Okay. 10:30. Wow. This is a good 10:30 game. Utah travels to Oregon. Utah's a 2-point favorite. It's 7:30 out there. I like Oregon at home, I think, for this game. I think they'll win. I think they'll put the ball back into Bo Nix's hands. They kind of messed with themselves last week, and I think they learned from that. I think Oregon will win this game. They're going to get some vengeance from last year. They're not going to beat them up. It's going to be a good game.
I mean, obviously it's a different coach and stuff like that, but a lot of the same players they remember. So I think they will remember this game. You know, they're a pretty physical team. They're not the same team that got blown out by Georgia. So I think Oregon wins. Going to be close. It'll be somewhere in that, I think, you know, 3-6 range, you know, but they'll beat them. They'll cover.
All right. So we got, Ohio State versus Maryland at Maryland, 3:30. I do not anticipate that this is going to look like the 2018 game. The last time we were at Maryland, I just think Ohio State has way too much firepower for them. Ohio State is a 27.5-point favorite going into this game. Over under is set at 63.5. I think Ohio State's going to win this game. I got it 55-17. So it's a cover and it goes over is what I believe.
55-17. I think they'll be a little bit more conservative just because, again, I think they're going to want to get out of this game as quickly as possible without hopefully any major injuries. I'm going to say 45-13. Puts them over the cover. So I do think they cover. But I think once they get into a comfortable position, you are going to see, and this could start possibly in the first half, you are going to see heavy run the ball. I do think they're going to try to establish the running game early, but I think if the running game is working and, you know, they can possibly spread it around over multiple backs, because I don't think, even if Trey's playing, I do think he'll have a big game. He'd be the player of the game. But I think, you know, if they're winning easily and he's up by, has 110 yards and a touchdown, his day's probably done. And they can get out then possibly with Chip Dallin and Xavier Johnson. I think they will. I think it will be a lot of running. If they could run the ball 40 times in this game, I think they will try to do it, because like, it's just get out, get healthy, Michigan week.
Should you leave one of mine or Trey at home for this game? I mean, yeah, you got a short roster.
If either one of them are not there, like, and you don't feel they're there and you're comfortable and Chip can play and you feel comfortable with the other three, I mean, leave them both home. I don't really care. I think they should probably bring one of them if they're healthy. I would probably assume Trey will be a little healthier than Mayan, but you know, we're not 100% sure on that, because we're not really 100% sure what's wrong with his foot. So,
right. Exactly.
You know, that's what modern Ohio State football is with, you know, the guessing games on some of this stuff, you know, but
I didn't mean to ask you, Josh Fryer, cause he played pretty well in place of DeJuan Jones last week. So, seems like all signs are pointing to DeJuan's going to be healthy enough to play. Should Josh Fryer start in front of Matt Jones though, to give him a week off that foot?
Yeah, I think that wouldn't be a bad idea. If they're comfortable with that, if they're comfortable with Fryer,
because he can play all five positions. I mean, they keep saying he can play all five positions if he's healthy. I mean, I don't know if Matt Jones' ankle, foot, whatever it is, can get better in a week, but I'm sure it would help.
Yeah. I don't know if that's in the cards, I'm completely 100% fine with that. But if it's not in the cards, they want Matt. If he Matt wants to still play, he's an offensive lineman. They got through these things. You know, it's his decision too. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, I don't think they're going to necessarily tell him that he has to take it off. They might, you know,
right, yeah.
It seems like a couple times this year that they've done maybe a couple load management stuff on some of these guys. So maybe, yeah, maybe it is like, maybe they bring him with you just in case, you know, they need him to play, but if they feel comfortable enough prior playing, you know, I mean, what the hell, let him rest.
I mean, that's just an idea. I thought, you know, who knows what they would do or not, but I don't think it could hurt them. I think they'll be fine against Maryland. I got nothing else. Usually we're there that we get to look at our bourbon selection. What are we going to drink today though? Or I'm not today. What are we going to drink after our victory on Saturday? Hopeful victory.
Yeah, we're going to go with a Weller's. What is it? The reverse, is it the reserve we have? I can't remember anymore. Which one?
There's,
I know we have the antique.
There's the antique, and the reserve is the green bottle. I'm pretty sure.
We'll go with the reserve this week. So that will be the shot, the Weller's.
All right. Well, I'm good then, as long as you are.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for stopping in tonight to the Buckeye Bar. I'm John.
I'm Mike.
OH.
IO. Go Buckeyes.
Go Buckeyes.